The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2017 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2017. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and the ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
I'm going to go ahead and get started. I am Barbara Seifer. I'm a first grade teacher and have been a first grade teacher for, seems like a long time, 11 years at Tall Oaks Classical School in Wilmington, Delaware. It is a joy to be here. I'm thankful that you have interest and curiosity about integrating poetry into the grammar classroom. There would be no better place than to start than with a poem. My students know this one by heart, and I've heard it so many times. I know it too, but I'm going to have it in front of me just in case I need to look down. So, For a Lord's Day Evening by Isaac Watts. Lord, how delightful 'tis to see a whole assembly worship thee. At once they sing, at once they pray. They hear of heaven and learn the way. I have been there and still would go. 'Tis like a little heaven below. Not all my pleasure and my play should tempt me to forget this day. O, write upon my memory, Lord, the text and doctrines of thy word, that I may break their laws no more, but love thee better than before. With thoughts of Christ and things divine, fill up this foolish heart of mine, that hoping pardon through your blood, I may lie down and wake with God. It is amazing, it is beautiful, it is lovely to see children memorize work like this. And that is really what cultivating a love and knowledge of fine poetry in the grammar classroom is all about. For as it says in Philippians 4:8, finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. And that's what we're really trying to do in our grammar classrooms by incorporating poetry. It is the beautiful, it is the praiseworthy, it is the lovely that we are focusing on. It's more than just math and science and Bible and reading. Those things are lovely and beautiful too, but it's really incorporating that richness. Work that has met the test of time. Different schools have different measures of what the test of time might be, and that is not to say that there isn't beautiful work that is contemporary work. We just don't incorporate it into our readings. Certainly, we'll have children bring us poetry all the time. Can I read this? Can I read that? And some of it is quite nice, and that is a decision that each school needs to make. Ours is typically a generation, and if that generation has passed, it is older work, and I'll be citing some of the work so you can see what we use as a reference. But it is, generally speaking, work that is beautiful and good and true with heroic images that creates an image within the child, within the listener, that elevates them. You'll see that in some of the work that we present. It has models of right behavior and excellence and uses richness of language and beautiful language. In many cases, it is words and language and structure that is far above their reading level and sometimes even their comprehension. It's not unlike when the children memorize catechism and Bible memory. Sometimes it is above a level that they can read many times and even understand fully. But the words stay within their heart. And that's the important thing. Incorporating beautiful word patterns and beautiful sounds. It's really taking in what you want to embody. Garbage in, garbage out. Beauty in, beauty out. Just finished having lunch with my friend Jen, and I had a salad with beets and goat cheese. Boy, I really would have loved a burger and Cool Ranch Doritos and a Diet Coke every day. All the time, and I tell my students that too, and there's nothing wrong with occasionally having a burger with bacon and cheese and a Diet Coke and Cool Ranch Doritos, but it's when we incorporate that solely in our diet that it corrupts our health. We're trying to treat them of a diet that is rich in things that create imagery and beliefs that are beautiful and praiseworthy and lovely. I could talk on and on about those poems, but I think instead what I want to do is have you see children who are presenting these poems in a number of different ways. This little boy is Samuel Taylor. Sam is one of seven children, all educated at Tall Oaks. He is the third son, perhaps? I'm looking at some of my colleagues. Samuel is this was in the middle. This happened, our fine arts program happens in the end of February. He was in February of his third grade year. He has been through the process. He had a sister that just graduated, and his whole family is very familiar with this process. So see Sam present his poem.
Hello, my name is Samuel Taylor, and I'll be reciting Our Heroes by Phoebe Carey. Here's a hand to the boy who has courage to do what he knows to be right. When he falls in the way of temptation, he has a hard battle to fight. Who strives against self and his comrades will find the most powerful foe. All honor to him if he conquers, a cheer for the boy who says no. There's many a battle fought daily the world knows nothing about. There's many a brave little soldier whose strength puts a legion to rout. And he who fights sin single-handed is more of your eyesight than he who leads soldiers to battle and conquers by arms in the fray. Be steadfast, my boy, when you're tempted to do what you know to be right. Stand firm by the colors of manhood, and you will overcome in the fight. The right be your battle cry ever, in waging the warfare of life. And God, who knows who are the heroes, will give you strength for the strife. Thank you.
Sorry that there was a buzzing during this. This is actually our fine arts presentation that they taped it at. But it's actually good that there was a buzzing between it, because it's not any different than some of the presentations that have happened here with things going on. But Samuel has been through this enough times to know that sometimes stuff happens. And he had to just keep going. Even though there was a buzzing in the background, it was a change of classes for the upper school, that they continue along that process, and he knew exactly what to do. You can see by the time that they get to third grade that he knew where to have his hands. He knew to look at his audience. He incorporated his use of his body that you'll see at that third grade level that you might not see at a first grade level because they've become accustomed to that process. This isn't the first time he's presented a poem. He did this in kindergarten as a group and first grade and second grade and third grade. And he'll do it all the way up to 12th grade. Connor Turley, I'm proud to say, was a graduate of Tall Oaks, the woman who spoke. She's a woman now, hard to believe, right, Mrs. Post? 18 years old. And she was able to present in such a way because she has been incorporating those skills all along the way. You had a question? I'll give you a whole list of them afterwards. So, yeah, so you'll be able to see all of them. My pleasure. How do teachers incorporate poetry into the grammar classroom? There's a number of different ways. These aren't the only ways. These are just some of the ways that I have seen it happen. The first is read aloud. That is the teacher reading aloud to the class, and that we do because at many times the children, the poetry is a level that is higher than that they can read. A resource that I use a lot, although it's certainly not the only one, is the Child's Garden of Verses coloring book, Robert Louis Stevenson. These are the poems with beautiful pictures. My bed is a boat. Some of these are poems that the children will, summer sun, that will have beautiful, rich language, lovely writing. These can be poems that they're coloring even as I'm reading them to them. These could be poems for a week or a poem that an individual child chooses. Something that they could be working on and thinking about. It's something that could be incorporated at higher levels when children are able to read at that level, but it could be started at the earliest grades. When we read aloud to them, they begin to have that formation of what good vocabulary sounds like, what beautiful writing feels like. Reading aloud is very powerful. Whether it's at this Robert Louis Stevenson, or I'm going to pull up another book that I found a lot of resource in called The Harp and the Laurel Wreath, and it separates poems not only into the grammar ones that we might incorporate, but dialectic and rhetoric, and refers to them in those ways as well. So if I wanted to choose something at a higher level to, you know, to incorporate Shakespeare William Rose Bennett or whomever, you can be pulling up beautiful work for the children to listen to. Reading aloud is very powerful. The second might be classroom selections, poetry that the entire class is learning, memorizing together, committing to memory, presenting as a class, just for the beauty of going through that. Might be something that they're reading all together or not. Here's an example, and the final one, and I'm going to go back to what a poetry selection looks like, but I couldn't split the screen to have a class do it together. Incorporating into a classroom selection and ultimately leads to fine arts and our poetry program. Perhaps I'll go there first. So let me show you a classroom selection. This is this past year's kindergarten class. Mrs. Holt is right there. She is our kindergarten age. She knows this poem as well as they do, I bet. She'll probably say it with them. And Tall Oaks Classical School, the way we address fine arts is that in kindergarten, the children learn a poem all together for presentation. Mostly because it's been our experience at kindergarten, they're just a little young and a little shy to be able to get up on stage all by themselves and introduce themselves, their poem, and present. So for whatever reason, that is what we've selected. Beginning in first grade, they do their own, straight through to 12th, kindergarten as a group. This is their poem. You noticed our kindergarten teacher, Mrs. Holly Chafee. She was down in front. She's doing something different at the kindergarten level that we're not doing at the first grade level because as they're participating as a group, she's not giving them the words, although she's there to help them if they needed it, but she was giving them the signal of when to start, when to begin, and helping them remember their hand motions so they're crisp and together as a class. It goes without saying, I'm sure, but I'll say it anyway. This is something that has been practiced over and over and taken apart to the smallest detail. But the reward is great. They've committed a poem to memory that is beautiful and lovely and praiseworthy. They have taken something and been able to present it and present it well, especially as a class, because they're so orderly that it just looks lovely. And then when she gave them even the turn to bow or the signal to bow and to turn was crisp and on mark. It came off really lovely. That's the kindergarten class. That was part of our fine arts program, but it's a little different because, once again, kindergarten presents as a group. As they get to first grade and on, they present individually. This is one way, and certainly not the only way, of approaching fine arts. It's been something we've been doing at our school for a very long time. Every teacher in our school has a binder that looks like this. You can tell that's mine for first grade, for fine arts. This is my master list of poems. Occasionally, and I mean very occasionally, once every several years, children will approach me, or parents, not really children, to say they wanted to add in an additional poem, and that is at the teacher's discretion. Rarely do I add one that's not in this book. So I've got a listing of poems and a guideline. Sometimes we incorporate scripture as well. That's at the teacher's discretion. What you're going to run into, though, is if you decide to add scripture in, especially if a parent might say, and we've had parents say this before, as a family, we are memorizing a certain passage or studying a certain book, and we want to be able to have our child memorize that and present that. That's great. And if that's something that you choose to do, we allow that. But then you have to think about, well, what version? Is it King James? Is it New King James? Is it ESV? Because you want consistency across all those areas. Also, if you don't have a book like this, the problem you're going to run into is you're going to have different versions of poems that are floating around on the internet and in books that are slightly different, but you want them to be exact, and that you'll have overlap across grades. If I add a poem in second grade, doesn't realize it, they've added it too. You might have the same child in two different grades doing the same poem, or two different classrooms if you've got multiple classrooms in the same grade. I'd be mindful of that. I'd be watchful of that. And then you'll see we've got time and word limits. We don't really pay as close amount of attention to the time limit, but it just helps you understand about how long they will be presenting. As you can see, grade one is a 120-word memory limit. So some of the poems are 100, some of them are 120, some of them are a little bit less, a little bit more. It's right in that realm. Second grade goes on a little bit more to fifth grade at 300 words. I know what you're thinking. You're saying, well, what is she doing at the higher levels? So I only put the ones that were for grammar school here because this section is only to be discussing grammar school, but I'll give you an idea. By the time they get to ninth and 10th grade, the poems last 5 minutes and they're 600 words. By the time they're in 11th and 12th grade, they're up to and including 720 words. I know it sounds incredible. I know when my children and my two children, Thomas and Megan, they joined Tall Oaks and were taught by the lady in the back in the African dress. When they were in learning their first poems in kindergarten and first grade, I thought, oh, they're never going to be able to get up there and say something that is 720 words long. It's no different than I have kindergarten and first grade moms come to me and say, oh, no, my child can never do that. Certainly they can. They absolutely can. Every child can. Does that mean some of them are a little bit more nervous than others? Sure. But they're all able to do it and do it well. God has created their minds in such a way that they can memorize and recite things, amazing things, lengthy things, and do it well. I notice for myself, at least, as I get older, it becomes more challenging. For them, it is something that they can do well. So I've got this listing of amount of time that I want for my first graders, and I've got this listing of poems. I've got, this is the list here. It's got to be a good 30, 35 different poems that I can select from any year. And the select part is very important. My children in first grade do not select their own poems. As children in older grades get to that grade, many times the teachers will say, here are the poems. You can select the poem that you want to recite. Sometimes there's the fan favorites, you know, that they've heard their siblings do or other students do that have been very interesting or funny or enjoyable or beautiful. For whatever reason, they want to request it and present it. And many times the teachers will allow them to do that. In first grade, I choose the poems for my students based upon a number of features. But I want to make sure the poem fits the child. Finding that right little thing that brings out the essence of that child, whether it's because it's a sweet poem, or because it's a scripturally based poem, or a prayer, or it's a leadership poem like Sam Taylor did at the beginning, what it takes to be a man and be courageous. You find the right poem for the right child. Here's an example. This little boy, his name is Zeke Wilson. Zeke was in my first grade class this year. Zeke is a sweet boy. I don't think he said very much of anything for the first at least month or two. He was quiet. He was one of those boys that would raise his hand, ask his question, put his hand back down. It was pulling words. He didn't talk to his neighbors very much either. He was a very quiet child. Even when we gave him this poem, I had a sense he might work with it, but I didn't really know how much, but I was led to it for him. And as the process, I'll talk more later, I'm listening to them all through the process of how that poem is developing, although I'm not teaching it to them. He would just present it as just kind of get up and present it in front of me like this and sit back down. This is the first time I heard him present it in front of the big group. I'd seen him present it in front of his classmates before. It was nothing like this. But this is him presenting it.
Hello, my name is Zeke Wilson, and I'll be reciting Merry Autumn Days by Charles Dickens. 'Tis pleasant on a fine spring morn to see the buds expand. 'Tis pleasant on the summertime to see the fruitful land. 'Tis pleasant on a winter's night to sit around the blaze. But what are joys like these, my boys, to Merry Autumn Days? We hail the Merry Autumn Days when leaves are turning red, because they're far more beautiful than anyone has said. We hail the merry harvest time, the gayest of the year, the time of rich and bounteous crops, rejoicing and good cheer. Thank you.
He's just so excited to be up there. You could see his hands, you could see it in his smile, that sweet little smile. You could see it in that enthusiasm. He could articulate so well, beautiful, and he just enjoyed that process. When visitors would come to our classroom, as they do at all of our classrooms so often, parents that are considering educating their child classically, coming out of any number of academic environments, from homeschooling to other Christian schools, from the public school setting, and they're getting a tour, and they want to know what defines what a classical school is. So many of these children, they can't wait. They're raising their hand, please, can I do my poem? And they can't wait to stand up. And this is something that defines us, something that they do well. Not Zeke. For memorization training, there's a number of steps. You have to start with the end. The first is selecting a presentation date. You've got the poems. You've got the child. Now you've got to decide, when am I going to have them present it? Because everything works back from there. We choose ours, and it happens in February, not by accident. All that early school stuff has kicked in or through the holidays. But we're not so close to the end of the year where everyone's starting to lose focus and things are falling, the wheels are falling off the cart, right? We're in the middle of that winter time where it's bleak and dreary and snowy, and everyone's a little cooped up. And that's when fine arts is really in focus. About 6 to 8 weeks prior to the presentation, poems are distributed with due dates by section. If this was my poem, this is what I would give to a parent, and I would draw a line based upon however many sections that they're going to need to, are going to have. So this had four natural breaks. There would be, this was a 4-week poem. Sometimes they've got more sections, sometimes less, but it's approximately that for first grade. 4 to 6 weeks. So if we're looking at the end of February, what usually happens is many of the teachers in that December timeframe prior to going to Christmas break, we're selecting the poem by child. Older grades many times give their poems to their children before they leave for Christmas, not to memorize over Christmas break, just to have it. And then the actual memorization happens beginning in January. Children are encouraged to read, understand, then learn and memorize their section. This is important. Learn the essence of the poem. What is the author trying to communicate? What is the beauty that is in that? Learn about it. Think about it. Read through it if it's at a reading level that they can read. Many times children are reciting poems if they can't read all the words, and parents are helping them with that. Presentation of memorization to date is done one-on-one with the teacher or aide. I and no teacher is teaching the poems to the child, and the child is not doing it alone. This is something that is done with the family, offline from school. It's the parent's responsibility and the child's to learn their poem. As they get older, I have very little interaction with my children on learning their poem, other than as we're driving to school on that Monday morning when they have to recite it for the teacher. Thomas, did you learn your poem? Do you know your section? And then they say yes, and I'm like, okay, good. We got that. They're responsible for learning it. Then at the due date, whatever due date I assign for those four increments, my aide, Deb, or I go in the hall with each child and they recite it, the whole thing. as far as they've gotten. Hello, my name is Barbara Seifer, and I will be reciting Merry Autumn Days by Charles Dickens, and going through that section. We're looking for words. Do they know the poem? Eye contact, inflection, projection. But we're not teaching them the poem. And then we're giving that feedback back to the parents on a regular basis. They're doing that one-on-one with a teacher or an aide out in the hall. They're not doing it for their classmates. It's still a process, especially at the early grammar school ages when they're just still working on presenting it. You want to make sure they know it well before they're presenting it for their class. They're not stumbling over their words. So they're not fearful of the process. Then, the last week or so of the process, memorization takes place. The memorization has taken place, and they're presenting it for their classmates. So once again, it's the family's responsibility. What and why, where and when? What are we doing? And what are we doing? It is important to know that many of the parents of the students in our class, almost all, have not been classically educated, have never gone through a process like this before. Many of the parents that I have are first-time parents. This is their oldest child. This is their first child. They don't know for presenting poetry, for memorizing poetry. So I want to educate them on the process. Dear parents, every year in our school, we present poems so the children incorporate poems into their memory that they love, that are praiseworthy, that they're able to get up and present in a way that is beautiful. And that presentation process is something that we do annually on said date. Please come back on that date with your grandparents and neighbors and church friends so they can see that child and all of the children present. I guess that's really important to note, too. We don't ask them to come in and just see their child present. We ask them to come and see the class present or several grades present. We want the children to not have a parent come in and out. It's not just about one child. It's about all of them. Come in, spend the morning with us. See the work that they have done. It's beautiful. And the how. Due dates by memory work. Presentation skills of what they should be working on with their child. Certainly we're going to keep on that process, but parents need to as well. And then once again, we have that weekly feedback that goes back to the parents. And I'll show you what that sheet looks like as well, so you'll see it in just a few minutes. When we talk about a child and a family, we know some of the families have been down this process before and they know how to coach their child well. This little boy's name is John O'McGarvey. He is the fourth child of the McGarvey family. There, his dad sits on the board at Tall Oaks. The older siblings have really set a high bar. They know what they're doing. They do it beautifully. And John aspires to be just like them. He has a great sense of humor. His teacher chose a beautiful poem for him. He is a fourth grader. He's been down this path four times on his own, and then one time as a class. So he's someone that knows how to do this well. This is John O'McGarvey with his poem.
Hello, my name is John O'McGarvey, and I'll be reciting The Backwards Rhyme, author unknown. Ladies and gentlemen, skinny and stout, I'll tell you a tale I know nothing about. The admission is free, so pay at the door. Now pull up a chair and sit on the floor. One fine day, in the middle of the night, two dead boys got up to fight. Back to back they faced each other, drew their swords, and shot each other. A blind man came to watch fair play. A mute man came to shout, hooray! A deaf policeman heard the noise and came to stop those two dead boys. He lived on the corner in the middle of a block, in a two-story house on a vacant lot. A man with no legs came walking by and kicked the lawman in his thigh.
What?
He crashed through a wall without making a sound into a dry creek and suddenly drowned. The long black hearse can cart him away, but he ran for his life and is still gone today. I watch from the corner of the big round table, the only eyewitness to facts of my fable. But if you doubt my lies are true, just ask the blind man. He saw it too.
What I noticed from that, in addition to that, and that is just such a curious one, by fourth grade, they get that idea of the nuances of that poem. In kindergarten, you saw them using their hands quite a bit and tapping, and then and they were doing it as a group, and their teacher really helped them with that process. And it was something that the teacher instructed them on, by the way. When they got to first grade, you'll remember Zeke was kind of here, and he was able to articulate it really well, and you could see that smile and vocalize and really project his voice. But he wasn't doing a lot of this, because they usually don't. They're still pretty self-conscious, but they're getting that process done. By second and third, Sam, the first child that went up, he had a little bit of hand motions, but he was just getting comfortable. By fourth grade, he's ready to start moving his hands, projecting himself, presenting in a way that is beautiful. And then they continue to grow through the process. Children who join us at this level, it's a little bit harder because they've never been exposed to this. Children who join us at this level have a self-consciousness. But he doesn't need to be self-conscious. He's been doing this since kindergarten. It's old hat. He's not fearful. That's why when we kept asking Khan, "Are you nervous when you're going to be presenting in front of the big grand ballroom?" She was like, "No, not really, no." Not because she's prideful, bold necessarily. It's because it's something that she's had a lot of practice doing. Presenting something that you know well, that you love, that has embodied you. And that's Sam. That's Jono. I know this is tough to see. I have extra copies of this grading sheet so you can see what that might look like. This is the grade one and all of the grammar grades poetry grading sheet. Down the left-hand side, it lists the weeks. And then I grade them, number one, on whether or not they have just basically learned the poem, the actual words, the actual words. Don't or do not isn't don't. They can't substitute words. They can't add words. They can't delete words. They can't blend words. It has to be the exact words. So we take a copy of the poem and we circle it or highlight it so they can go back and we'll write notes on there for the parents to assist them in learning the poem exactly. And then we also look at things, not only of word correctness, but of posture, of introducing yourself in the poem, of hand gestures, if they have them, voice projection, diction, and pace and timing. And I'd give you a copy of that if you want to get a copy of that sheet. Now, when I say grade, grade is a funny word because they're not assigned a grade per se that goes as part of the grade book for the anything other than the poem memorization. That's just something that I choose at our level, or that we have chosen at our level. So at other levels, parents or teachers may incorporate those as part of your grade. But at first grade, usually the poem is enough. So I give them a grade, and I, in my grade book, count it as part of their reading comprehension grade. I have a reading because I don't have a poetry section, so I group it into reading and I group it into comprehension because my other one is fluency, and I don't want to put it in fluency because fluency's got to be a real hard metric for us. Are they reading at a rate that's giving them enough abilities to read complex material? And that's not this. So it goes as part of their reading comprehension grade. And just a small portion during that, but it's their ability to memorize this poem. And then they've got multiple weeks to do it. And they do. Sometimes the parents, like once again, we're training up the parents, not just the students. So it might mean that I need to send an extra email. Hey, you might have forgotten. Every Monday, you're responsible for making sure your child is ready with their poem. So we're going to test them again tomorrow, and maybe you could work with them this evening. And usually parents are very interested in helping them to do their very best on that. The next part is the poetry memorization and grading that happens on the presentation. We've got their poems all during the month. Were the 6 weeks, weekly they come to us. But remember, the first step in this was to choosing a big presentation date where they present it for an audience. That's this grading sheet. These are judges that look at, and I'll give you the next one because that's got, and I'll come back to it. These are independent judges. We pull people from the community. It might be a retired teacher from your congregation who loves the English language and poetry. It might be someone that you know within the community. You'll know lots of independent judges, people that are just from your churches or from your community, from aunts and grandmothers and whatever, who can fairly evaluate the children on how well they memorized and those other factors. At the grammar school level, we evaluate. We don't rank. At dialectic and rhetoric, the children are ranked. You're still not given a grade necessarily for their presentation, although they're graded on it, it becomes part of the grade book rate, but not their ranking. The ranking helps them know how well they did in relation to their peers if they were the top performers. Children who then go on to what we have as an evening production of our fine arts presentation. So one child from different grades in the grammar school level might present, but the winners of fifth, sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, and so on present. This is a big deal in our school. We're raising them up to do it well. They're aspiring to present this work well. And that's why we have rankings. But we don't do that at the grammar school level. I think there was a time, a long time ago, when we first had this process, we ranked them at the grade school level. It was a pressure cooker. Children didn't respond as well to it because it was just too nerve-wracking. Truth be told, and it'll just be the truth that's within this room, we get those rankings or these grades, the evaluations back, and only sometimes do I give them back to the students. I'm a first grade teacher. You're all teachers, I believe. You know enough how to position things and work with your parents and encourage the students without, sometimes independent judges don't know that and they don't know the language to use. So the parents might not know how to communicate effectively to the parents to help them feel encouraged. So I might take those rankings in the parent-teacher conferences, discuss them with the parents, but I don't necessarily hand those back because they don't necessarily provide meaningful feedback to help them with the next time they encounter this in the following grade. It's useful, but only to a point. It's useful for the children, I believe, most to be able to get up in front of an audience and do this well. That goes on to the evening fine arts program. And that gets us to questions and answers, I guess. I know we've had a number. Yeah. We don't. In our classroom, we have this fine arts program, and that takes our whole, basically our winter time. We will read poems all throughout the year, but this whole big process of memorizing poems happens once a year in first grade. Yeah, that's that. They get their own. They'll be reading poems together and learning things together, but where they get their own poem and present it, that's the big program happens once a year. Sure. Yeah, the evening program has the school, the day program is when they're ranked. The evening program is when they present after they've all been ranked and the top performers present. The evening program is fine arts, truly fine arts. So it's not just the poems. We will have in the hallway artwork that's been done in our art classes. That's lovely. We have many children that are very skilled in dance and ballet. They will present. We will have children who are playing various instruments. The orchestra will play. So there, all of those fine arts components are presented on the fine arts evening. Yeah. That's a good question. It is for us, because of the size of our school, it is not. It is broken out into grade segments, kindergarten, first, and second, and all of their parents, brothers and sisters that are at school, their parents can go get them and bring them in, and they often do. So usually the students are presenting in front of 150, 200 people. I think if you had the whole school K through 12 and all of their family and friends, it could be 500, 750 people, and that would be overwhelming. Groups of classes. Right. give or take. And then afterwards, of course, there's the treats that come with afterwards. So they present, and then they go to a reception, and they get treats that have been lovingly prepared for them, and they go through that whole process of etiquette for that. And then they greet their guests, and then they enjoy that time, and then we move back on to the segue back into the classroom. Yeah, it works really well. I saw another hand. Is there any other questions? Yes. If within classroom groups, so if it is, for example, kindergarten, first and second, all of kindergarten, first and second will come downstairs. Let's say they're scheduled from 8:30 to 9:30. The parents know that in advance, and then all those parents, grandparents, sundry family friends come in during that time. Then they all go to the reception together, other than the judges. They stay. The next third through fifth comes in, and they do their piece. The difference, though, is that if you're a kindergartner and you have a fifth grade and a sixth grade brother or sister, mommy might take you out to come and watch your siblings. Yeah. But they're not presenting. We don't have all of the various grades because the audience just gets big. Yeah. Yes? Well, that is the main, one of the main tenets of our of the way we position the classical Christian education. I am not here. My job is to not take the place of the parent. It is the parent's responsibility to educate their child. I am here to partner with them. So parents, I would say, parents, this is your beautiful child, and God has given them to you to educate. I'm here to help you. Here's the poem that we're working on. Rarely do I have parents that are not up to the task. And if they're not, that's great, because I'm there to come beside them and help them understand that it's their responsibility to educate their child. That's a big difference. My husband is a public school teacher, night and day. We have parent-teacher conferences. I get 100% of the parents attending parent-teacher conferences. My husband has parent-teacher conferences, teaches in middle school. He teaches 120, 130 students. We'll get 5, maybe 10. Either high excellers or parents that have to come in. It's a different way of approaching education. We are going against that, and those parents that don't know, it's because they're influenced too much by the secular society that believe that, here is my child, go educate them. Let me know when you're done in another 12 years. But that's not how we approach it in a classical education, praise God. Yeah. No. You mean like a class setting? Oh, yes. We do. And here's a fun fact. If you're trying to put together a program and you're going to do presentations like this, the way the children present in first and second and third grade is by height order. Why by height order? Because if you put them in alphabetical order, I am getting up and down those stairs for every single child. Because there's Jimmy and Susan and Bobby and Ricky and da-da-da-da-da, right? Because now I got to keep moving the mic because they can't do it because they're first graders. But if I do it in height order, I might be able to get 2 or 3 children that I can gradually get up a little bit more, then get up and adjust the mic, and then we do it in height order. And it works a lot better than for my Fitbit. Yes? No, it's usually about 2 weeks later. Mm-hmm. And that gives parents an opportunity because, once again, parents might not know that their child is presenting. We want all parents to go to the evening program. It is not a required event. So when it's not required, you're going to get most parents, but not all parents. I hate to say it, but I'm going to say it because as parents and educators, you're going to want to know this. You're going to want to encourage your parents, tell them. Don't just take junior out after they've presented. whatever the time frame is, let's say 7 to 8:30, please, for the respect of all of the children that are presenting, be there at the beginning and take, I know it's late, I get that, but junior can make it through that whole time. Stay. Stay because it's the right thing to do. Stay because it's respectful of the work that has been done. And stay because you want a complete vision. and you're in kindergarten and you're learning poems like for the Lord's Day evening, you think that this is the vision. It's not the vision. It's part of the vision. You want them to see that beautiful work that they are doing as seniors and say, that is the work that I want my child to have the ability to do. I want them to see the connoisseurs, and I want them to know that your child can do that. Because that's the stuff that you need to keep in your memory when the going gets tough, when you're slogging through the homework and the tasks that are hard and it gets challenging. And we are to keep our eyes on the prize and focused on the work that is set before us. And that's critical. And I don't believe it's just our school that experiences it, but sometimes you really have to encourage the parents that they should stay for the whole time. Because they, not all of them, some of them want to pull them out ahead of time. And it's disappointing. Yes. Well, I don't believe we have one in here because the, as a matter of fact, I'm positive we don't, because the teachers choose because they memorize, but they can memorize, they memorize the Ten Commandments, the long version, right out of Exodus. And I bet you Lisa could say it now, the whole thing, because you memorize the whole thing. And it's, I don't know how many words long that is, Lisa. Do you have a nice sense? But it is, it's got to be a good 3 to 5 minutes that they're reciting, right? Do you know, I suppose? Yeah. In big chunks. Right, and I couldn't agree more, and I don't know that I said it in those words, but we encourage the parents, hold them to that standard, because undoing bad habits is not impossible. Nothing is impossible. It is really hard to undo bad habits. So hold them to that standard right up from the beginning. Yes. Yeah. At least weekly. There's beautiful, all kinds of resources. And I meant to do this, but I'm happy to, I'm going to write my email address on the board. If you would like to, if you email me your address, I will, or email me and just request it, because I won't be able to keep a sheet now and keep track of it. I would be happy to share with you the resources that I use. These various books, the names of the poems that we listed here, the poems that we use on a regular basis, but there are beautiful works out there, and that creates a beautiful image in their head. Not all for just memorization, but just for, let me just write that really quickly before I forget. If you send me an email, this is my work email, or if you have any questions about, it's the email that's in your booklet. Yep, barbaracypher@talloxde.org. So good. Yeah, saved myself the effort. But feel free to email me even during the process if you have some questions or you things that you want to, you're not sure about, or how did you do that, or something becomes fuzzy. I'm happy to answer your questions at any time. It's a well-oiled machine within our school, but at the same time, it's something that continues to evolve. And we're happy to help you learn that as well. Here in the room, as you've probably noticed, in the back of the room is Barbara Post, Mrs. Barbara Post. She had been at Tall Oaks for a very long time. She left a couple years ago, has been with Rafiki, building schools in Africa. Jen Walker. Jen, could you raise your hand? Jen teaches at Tall Oaks in the fifth grade, and Jen if you're teaching older grades in the grammar school, she was the teacher that helped the fifth graders learn their poems and assign their poems. And so if you're doing older grammar school, she might be a good resource for you. And next to her, Lisa Holt. Lisa, just raise your hand. And Lisa is the kindergarten aide, so she had worked a lot with those kindergarten poems and helping those children not only learn this beautiful poem, but when you had them memorize the Ten Commandments and other fine works, because I know you do other things as well in there. Feel free to ask us questions or if there's things that you want specific. Yes? Second grade, she assigns. Third grade, they assign. Jen, how about by fifth grade? Are you assigning or are they are choosing yet? Yeah. You're probably in dialectic, and I think it might be really dependent upon the teacher. Yeah, but I know by the time they get to rhetoric, you have to let them choose it, because that's part of that rhetoric process, right? Of them choosing that work, of them selecting a work that reflects what they're trying to communicate and communicating it well. Dialectic, they're still in the disagreement phase, so whatever poem you get them, you may want to switch them. You might assign a poem and give them the opportunity to change that. Jen had mentioned finding poems that fit the child. Also remember, though, you may want to, you want to strengthen weakness. You don't only want to strengthen strength. So if their poem is naturally to have funny poems, maybe give them a poem that's serious. Give them a poem that is whatever, different, so they have to draw upon different strengths. Challenge them. Here's something I love, is that we're at a smaller school. We're about, I don't remember what our exact numbers are, 200 student enrollment. We have a lot of interaction between the upper school and the lower school and little children and seniors. And I bet you if I pulled Connor or any of the other students who are still around, Ben Schneider that's here, some of the other students, and said, hey, I was going to give the swing poem to a child. What poem did you have? They could probably tell you what poem they had in first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and in all likelihood, they could recite it for you. It's really great because they can memorize anything. I don't remember what I had for breakfast this morning, but they can remember the most beautiful detail. Encourage them along that. For me as a teacher and as a mother, I remember which poems were my children's and assigning those to different children, but also remembering them. I keep lists of different children that had different poems and see where that poem went through the school. I would love to get all the children that recited one poem together and have them recite it. How great that would be. And I think we did that a couple years ago, the year that you left, where the seniors and the kindergartners together recited the long version of the Ten Commandments. Oh, it was crazy. It was beautiful. It was amazing, right? It was amazing because we know the Ten Commandments, but do we know every word as it is written in Scripture in the ESV? You know, Lisa does, backwards and forwards, right? She says it every day with them, or very often now. But when they all get together and say it, wow, it was sweet. Any other questions? I am thankful that I was able to be here to present to you today. I will be around if you have more questions. If you send me an email, I'm happy. Or if you just want to look at these books right now, this is the one, Laura Berquist, The Harp and the Laurel Wreath, Poetry and Dictation for the Classical Curriculum. This is I happened to just fall upon this book. This is a fantastic book. The Child's Garden versus Coloring Book. I got this at ACCS. I didn't see it out there right now. I've gotten this a couple years ago at ACCS. You had a question? I will have to look it up for you, the Sam Taylor's one. Yeah, but if you send me an email and ask me, I will just say the first poem and I can pull it up for you. Yeah. Thank you. I do. I have it right. Let me turn this off.